Hi, and welcome to another episode of Journey to a Dream, which is brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance. Once again, we are also supported by the Andreas Racing Association, and I'll post the link to their website on the podcast page as well. Do check them out. Meetings throughout the year. We've also got some tickets to give away to the next meetings that are coming up. You can find out more about that on the Manx Radio Motorsport page. So today's guest then has just been on the island and done their first road race over here, which we're going to hear all about. It went pretty well as well. And he's also looking forward to his first time around the mountain course with MGP 2025. Let's meet him now.
Yeah, my name's Craig Kennelly. I'm 34 from Hornchurch in East London. Bike-wise, I don't really do much other than just ride and racing them. I used to ride on the roads, but I don't anymore. So yeah, so that's about it.
So Craig, how did you end up being here on this rather beautiful, as we speak, day on the Isle of Man? What are you doing here?
So this week I was racing at the 700, and this weekend I'm doing the second lot of MXGP newcomer weekend. So yeah, so I'm here for a week and the sunshine, and it's been glorious weather.
Well, we're hoping that you are the omen that brings that with you, to be honest, especially for MGP. But let's just reflect on the Southern first of all. Was this your first time at the Southern?
Yeah. Never been to the Southern before, never even seen it. I do like to throw myself in a deep end. I've got the big bike at the moment, so I'm on the Fireblade. Everyone did warn me about the Southern being a bit tight. It's like riding down the London Tube, apparently, at 180 mile an hour. So yeah, so turned up, done a couple of laps on a bike that someone lent me, a road bike. Realised how bumpy and blind it all is, so kind of was a bit daunting. Didn't get much in the way of practice this week just because of some red flags and a bit of a weather problem and that, so they missed one of our sessions and the others were reduced. I think I got something like 4 or 5 flying laps in total. So yeah, that's kind of how the week started.
It ended fairly well though, didn't it? Because your first time on the podium here.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, so unfortunately I didn't make the main sort of superbike race, but they did put us into the founders race. So they put us at the back actually, which was quite daunting because starting from 18th on the grid, having to pass people is quite tight around there. So yeah, so I started off, managed to get up to 5th on the first lap, elbows out, and then yeah, just worked my way, got to 3rd overall. So it's not too bad for the first time around there, first race.
And it must be quite something. You know, we talk so often about what goes into getting people here, and we know how much it costs and how much time it takes up. But that really, particularly when you're thinking about the sponsors and all the people that have supported you, that must be such a moment when you're standing on the podium thinking, yeah, I did that.
Oh, massively, yeah. I mean, obviously, it's only a third, but for me, it's quite a big thing. It's good to kind of like, especially the team that have come over and helped us with Mark and Neil, kind of they're really sort of fundamental to us, and just the X-Racers themselves, they put a lot of effort themselves, and it's good to reward them, you know, just as much as I enjoy racing and doing well, it's good for them to kind of see the benefits. So yes, I really appreciate their help in this.
So take us back then, Craig, where did racing, particularly road racing, all start for you?
So racing actually started, so I was never allowed motorbikes as a kid, that was the rule, and then when I turned 16 I sort of started off, bought a bike against my parents' sort of wish on the roads, didn't even know how to change gear, somehow survived for a few years, and then started doing track days, fell into racing. First season of racing, I won a rookie championship, so then I carried on. Got into kind of BSB, started doing Ducati Cup, and then the last few years have been a bit of super sport, a bit of stock foul. Road racing was never really kind of on my mind. I never even watched it, if I'm honest. I knew of the TT and I knew of like kind of the Northwest and bits and pieces. It's mainly because of my friends that have raced previously tell me about it. And the analogy they used was just like curries. You know, you kind of, it gets to a point where the spice gets a bit dull. And then I thought, well, I'll tell you what, I'll give the Northwest a go. So 2 years ago, we done Northwest as a newcomer and absolutely loved it. So we decided we're going to go road racing pretty much, not full time, but that's our main sort of angle now, is to look at doing the roads. So done the Northwest again this year, although I did do it with a fractured pelvis after a very, very bad winter test in Portimao. It didn't go down well. So 6 weeks later, yeah, I was at the Northwest with my pelvis in pieces. Then we've come here. So not really done much this year so far. Done the Southern and then we've got the Manx. So looking forward to doing that and then moving on to maybe TT and stuff in the future.
So when you're recovering from what you said was a pretty nasty incident in Portimao, I'm really baffled at the idea that you can sort of, I guess, overcome what must be a significant amount of pain and just think, yeah, I'm parking that to one side and this is just what I'm going to do. How do you do that?
Yeah, I mean, that was a bit of a horrendous one for us because it was the last day of my sort of start of the season, so testing, and I high-sided at about 105 mile an hour landed on my back and broke the pelvis. I didn't actually realise at the time. I stood up and picked the bike up, and my leg didn't feel particularly great, if I'm honest. It felt like it was coming out of its socket, which it was. I didn't know that at the time. Got on a plane home as well, because the Portuguese hospital wasn't that great. And then it was just a kind of, I thought that was a season over. But after about a week of, I've been told not to move for a month, I kind of, termination kicked in, and then we started looking at the Northwest. Was in 6 weeks, so we said let's see if we can. At worst, we'll go and watch. If we can get on the bike and ride it, then we'll go. The mad thing is, we was on the Superbike, Superstock, and the Supersport sessions, so we done all three classes. I actually finished, well, 5 out of 6 races. The race I didn't finish was a DNF due to the fuel pump failing on the big bike, but. It was extremely physical, trying to have to manhandle 212 horsepower at 9,200 mile an hour with your legs sort of not in great shape. I sort of learnt to walk a week before, if I'm honest as well. I shouldn't pretend this. But it was good, yeah. So we done that, and yeah, we sort of thought after the Northwest we'll just have a good month off. And it was a bit of a gap between that and the Southern. We did do an endurance race, or tried to do an endurance race the week before the Southern, a 6-hour sort of no limits endurance race, which ended terribly because we was ill prepared. Although my bike was not a problem, my teammates was, so yeah, there was some mechanical problems, and we just pulled out because we didn't want to run the risk of, you know, doing the rest of the 5.5 hours on my Fireblade when I was doing the Southern the following week. So yeah, no, and road racing, that's kind of, obviously got the Manx after Southern, and that's what sort of full focus is on now.
And how are you physically now? Do you feel completely healed? Are you still
Yeah, no. I'm in the gym sort of 5-6 days a week. I can't really run. I used to do like 50-60 kilometre runs, amount of miles a week, and I can't really do that now, which is quite frustrating. But I can do stuff. It's not perfect, but it's not bad. I mean, I didn't really notice it at the Southern, and that's bumpy and quite violent around there. So yeah, didn't really notice it. It's the adrenaline overcome that one.
Do you know what? I mean, we constantly say that motorcyclists are another breed, and I think that just proves it. And that absolute grit and determination to think, you know, I've got my mind set on what I'm going to do. A little piffling little injury is not going to stand in the way. I mean, it's quite incredible.
Yeah, say that to my missus and my mum. They were not happy.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, because I don't know how you go from not being allowed a bike at all, or even the thought of having a bike and the talk of it is not allowed, to doing what you do now. Has mum come round?
Yeah, I mean, the parents sort of, I wouldn't say they're happy, but they're kind of, I'd say they're proud of it. I'm sort of living my dream, if I'm honest, and that's what life's about. It's about kind of following your dreams, and they may not sort of be quite obvious when you're younger, and they sort of appear as you develop and get older. So my dream is to carry on doing the road racing and hopefully be successful in it. And I think that they're kind of, they can see my happiness. So that's one of the main things. But I can also appreciate that, you know, I think I've counted something like 18 fractures since I started racing. So it does happen. And you just pick yourself back up, and they don't like seeing you hurt and things, and the recoveries of that. It's quite daunting and quite annoying, but yeah, it's. I think they're kind of getting used to it now, and they know I'm not going to change. Yeah, I'm just going to carry on and keep doing it.
Do you take a while to get through airport security?
Sometimes, not all the time.
In terms then of how you go about from starting out and then thinking ultimately, you know, the other man you hadn't really heard much about until you presumably decided to put your entry in for the Manx Grand Prix. How did that all come about? At what point did you decide that's what you wanted to do?
I mean, so actually last year after Northwest, I sold up all my, I had a Supersport Ducati, and I sold that up and bought the Fireblade to do the roads. Actually put my entry in for the TT for this year. Obviously got nipped back. It's fair enough, to be fair. I completely understand, and it was always going to be a stretch to do that, because as the sort of organisers said, you'd have to be on some serious pace straight away with the TT. There's no messing around. The Manx, they'd want you to do first, and that does kind of get your eye in. And I completely agree. You know, I've been riding around on some 1,000cc BMW around the mountains section, and it is, yeah, it's going to be quick. It's going to be fast. The island itself, actually, for the first time, only come here in February for the first set of newcomers, so I've never even been to the Isle of Man, and I actually do really love it. I keep saying I'm going to move out here, because every time I come here it just gets nicer and nicer, but maybe not in the winter, it's probably cold and windy, but
no, yeah. It's fine, it's always like this. Yeah. It's absolutely always like this. Yeah, don't worry about coming over in November. But that's the reality though, isn't it? I think, you know, obviously the mountain course itself has got a real pull, but the island's got a real charm about it. And I think the love of motorcycle racing for somebody like you, who's equally as passionate about it, yeah, it must be a really nice place to be.
Yeah, I mean, everywhere you go, it seems to be biker friendly. It's, you know, I suppose you get some people come over and take the liberties, but for me it's a very welcoming place. Everyone's polite. We had some kids walking around the paddock yesterday, and we gave them some bags and hats and stuff to sign, and I've never seen such polite kids in all my life. They was, could I have that please, thank you, and it was brilliant. Whereas where I'm from in London, it's, you know, it's not like that at all, so it is quite refreshing.
How are you fitting in coming over here, doing your newcomer weekends and racing and all the things you have to do alongside normal life? Because presumably you've got a job as well that you're doing?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, so I work in the city of London. It is busy. It's one of those kind of high pressure, stressful jobs. I mean, years ago it would have been difficult, but now I take the mindset of work is work and it pays for racing, so that's essentially what I do it for. I pay bills and pay my racing, so I kind of have good agreements. I mean, Smart, they're my company I work for, they're actually one of my sponsors as well. They help us out, you know, they kind of make sure that I'm not sort of, I can get away to do the racing and get the annual leave and things like that, which is great. They also support us financially as well as, like, you know, mentally and everything else, you know, so it's really good. Even my CEO of the company phones us up to see how we're doing and make sure we're all right in case we have an off and stuff like that, so yeah, it's good. So I'm quite blessed in that sense.
But then it's still, I guess, it's difficult, isn't it, trying to fit everything in and alongside family life as well and sort of spending some downtime. Do you ever really switch off?
No. I think it's a good thing. Some people think maybe bad that, you know, I just change from one thing to another. So if it isn't racing, when the winter happens, the winter blues kick in and you're not doing anything, I then go and I referee and I judge boxing. So I do the same as that. So I kind of flip one to the other. I'm one of them that has to be continuously occupied. So I finish work, I come home, I go to the gym for an hour and a half, and then that's kind of like my routine, bit of work on the bike, and then that's it. I don't watch telly. I have no idea what current programmes and things are because I don't do it, so yeah.
God, it's really interesting, isn't it? And I think, you know, clearly then a mindset and a personality that's really so well suited to the sport you love.
Yeah, oh, 100%. I mean, I think that people, the whole dauntingness of the TT circuit actually attracts me more because I know I've got the right kind of calibre mind to learn stuff like that. So I can, I wouldn't say photograph memory, but I've got a memory good enough for me to know where I am and learn things. And I like the fact that I'm learning something new. It's kind of keeps me engaged. So riding around and setting a story in my head, because that was one of the things that someone told me, is as you're learning the circuit, have a story so you can always kind of, as you're talking to yourself as you're riding around, you never get lost, and if you do, you quickly find yourself type thing. So that is one of my fortes, shall we say.
And is that what you do? So I mean, obviously you haven't been round here on closed roads on the mountain course yet, but you've done plenty of laps, I'm guessing, already. I know that's where you've just been now. Yep. Doing a few laps around, but have you got that constant dialogue going and thinking sort of one step ahead, or how does that work?
Absolutely, yeah. So I mean, the first sort of newcomer events that I've done, or days I've done here, Milky and the guys took us around and they pretty much just said, you got to learn it. Everyone's given me their opinions, you know, learn all the corners by names. Some people said, like, get the story in your head, you know, you want it to be like as if you're riding to work. So it's almost, you can...
Just very quickly.
Pretty much, yeah, very fast road to work. Yeah, although saying that, I've heard some fast ones down the A30 into London before, so...
We won't mention that.
We won't, no. But yeah, so it's that kind of learning it is super important. I believe that, you know, I've got that kind of capacity to learn things very quickly, and my speed comes organically, so I don't go out and just try and fire in fast laps straight away. That's kind of like, even the Southern, you know, turned up and it was like, give me time, give me a couple of laps and I will start to progress, but I do it safely. So I'm never going to kind of be rubbing the walls, my shoulders and stuff. I want to be coming, you know, doing it fast, doing it safe, doing it fun. But also I've got a little knack to where, you know, I kind of say, actually my talent with racing is, I think it's average, you know, and I've just sort of worked through it, you know, by just repetition and working hard at it. So I've got above average just by kind of working hard. So then that's what I do with the TT. That's my mindset, is I'll go there and I'll do a couple of laps and then all of a sudden it'll click. And for the annoyance of my actual team, Neil, my main man, he always says, he goes, the most frustrating thing for you is that you'll put your fastest lap in at the end of a session when the tyres are most worn and you're most tired, and all of a sudden, bang, you'll put a PB in. So it's just, that's the way I work.
And it must be so hard to imagine what it's going to be like going round on closed roads, because obviously you have to adhere to, at the moment, to all the speed limits and all the sort of road furniture and other people. Have you got a sense of what to expect on that first time down Glencrutchery Road?
Not really, if I'm honest. I mean, I've obviously going down there, pace is going to be massively different to what I've been doing. There were sections of that kind of the over the mountain and that you can sort of wind it on, but I was very conscious that if I'm doing X mile an hour, the cars coming the other way are also doing that, and I've only got half the width of the road. So, and you know, kind of like the when I was riding around the Southern earlier in the week, it become detrimental riding around after. Once I've been out on the bike, I don't want to go back out on the road bike, because then I'm learning the turning points and the reference points at speed. I don't want to then unlearn that by trying to have to narrow it down again and make it difficult. So I sort of just parked the bike. But yeah, for the laps I'm doing, I'm very conscious. Obviously, I've got traffic lights and, you know, can't take liberties with speed and stuff like that. So for me, it's just more like getting my eye in, that looking around, seeing kind of the reference points I've been watching on the onboards. You know, they're quite important. So yeah.
Is there anyone in particular you're watching?
I mean, I've got a McGuinness lap, which was just bananas fast. That's, I think, a 2015 lap. It's probably too fast for me to learn, but there's a locker lap with Danny Webb, I believe, on some old 500s. So it's a bit slower and it's a bit more manageable to kind of watch those. So it's a bit more flowing, should we say, which is good.
And in terms of the MGP, we know that there are a number of newcomers, and we're hopefully going to speak to most of them on this podcast before MGP this year. But the importance of building those friendships and connections during the newcomer weekends and whatever, and I'm guessing, you know, having a little WhatsApp group where you can all talk to each other. Have you found that helpful?
Yeah, brilliant. I mean, the newcomers stuff at the Rose, it seems to be, it's very good. Definitely for the Manx, is probably, they've gone above and beyond, if I'm honest. Doing the two weekends, I think, is really good. I think meeting the other riders that are probably in the same boat as us, obviously there's going to be argy-bargy, a bit shoulders when someone's got to be first, fastest newcomer, so... I think everyone's going to be going for that, but yeah, it is good to kind of do it with people that are also thinking the same that you're thinking. They're going to have the same level of nerves and everything associated with it, so it is good.
Also, the other thing that we talk about is just how much affection I think there is for the motorcycle community generally. And you were saying that while you've been over here this week, you've been staying at a flat in Port Erin, and that was that through a friend of a friend or something, and somebody you've never met before, but it's funny how things all work out.
Exactly that, yeah. So it just happened that I think Ilium Milky's son was racing some of the stock fowl over at BSB, and I sort of got talking to Milky and their team, and then actually it turned out that they knew through someone who was coming to watch us at we supported a MotoGP round at Silverstone as well, and there was a guy who came through another sponsor to watch. And you do get people that kind of go, oh, you know, I'm over in the island, I've got bikes and stuff like that. But it was just fantastic. People I've only met once have shipped their bike out to the Isle of Man. It's been parked there for months waiting for me to just use as and when I want to come out. And then their friends obviously got places on the island that has kind of put me and the team up in Port Erin for this week, which is, again, fantastic. It's just that level of help and support that makes it possible, really, if I'm honest, because if you'd have to spend, you know, the hire car and the hotel or some sort of accommodation, you know, that then takes away from, you know, the tyres or even the ability to do it. It might just make it a little bit too expensive for you to try and do it. And it's a breath of fresh air, really, if I'm honest, that the racing community is such a big thing. We call it the paddock life. It really is good.
Tell us then about the team that you're going to be racing for at MGP.
Yeah, so I'm racing for Ian Locker on the Supersport bike. I race for him at the Northwest on the same bike, so I've kind of got a bit of understanding and knowledge of the bike.
And how did that partnership all come about?
That was, again, through a friend, Paul Owen, who's sort of been racing the TT and Manx and pretty much everything since about 1922. And he just pulled one of his contacts and said, you know, he's looking for a ride or looking for a bike to use. Spoke to Ian, just said, look, I'm a safe rider, I'm a little bit older than some of the other ones, maybe. I don't know, definitely other than in the short circuit stuff, I feel like twice the age of some of the kids I'm racing against. I'm only 34. But yeah, so and it just turned out that, yeah, we managed to get it kind of working, done the Northwest with them. Although, granted, again, I had to carry a bit of an injury. It wasn't the kind of performance I wanted to do. And I did say to Ian, like, I might have to pull out on this. And he had no pressure. He said, look, if you want to come and do it, then we're happy. If you don't, then again, we're happy. The good thing about Ian and the whole team is just how calm everyone is, and where it's like a well-oiled machine. So, you know, the bikes were impeccable. They just, I think we got on, I sat on it because I'm a little bit tall, 6'1", so I had to kind of move the bars and foot pegs a little bit. Apart from that, the bike handled like a dream out of the box, so it was, I didn't really need to change much at all. And when I come in and, you know, if we had to make a change or had to discuss anything, it was just calm. And for me, that's exactly what I need for the Manx. It's kind of chaos around me. I just need calm heads. And Ian's, obviously, his knowledge of the place is second to none. So to have that in your corner as well, you know, if I'm struggling, he'll take us out in the van, or we'll just run through the area that we might be struggling with, and he's definitely helped. So, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, you couldn't have a better mentor, could you, in terms of not just the sport, but the Isle of Man as well?
Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. So, I mean, Ian's been great. Paul's been great. I've got a couple more friends that have done the Manx as well. So they're all kind of, I suppose they're all retired racers now that still want to be involved, and they're coming over. Paul's going to be there as well. It's good for them because they want to be involved, and I want to kind of be a part of it as well. So it's working out.
So as we're talking then, we're sort of end of second week of July. Give us an idea of what the next few weeks are going to look like for you.
Yes, yeah, proper first world problem. So I go back to work for a week, and then I fly to Mexico for 10 days because I have to go on holiday, obviously. And then I'm literally come back and I'm flying to the Manx. So I've got a week of work and then back to the Manx. So this is my last sort of time to get over, really, to do that. But I've been here since Sunday, and I've done quite a few. And
have
I've
you counted how many?
No idea. No. There was one point where the mountain was shut on Wednesday, so I actually got to the bungalow and had to go back. So I started riding the course backwards. Someone said to me, that's a great idea, ride it backwards, because you'll get more of a visual of like the steepness of things. But then it was a bad idea, because it was confusing me even more, like trying to remember where the late apexes and things were and stuff. So yeah, just discount that, you know, just parked up and went home.
And your holiday in Mexico, I'm guessing from what you've told us so far, it's not just going to be sitting down in a sun lounge or reading a book.
No. Even the holiday last year, I was up at 6 in the morning going for morning runs and gym sessions and stuff like that, which I can't sit. I will read a book, but I do get bored of it.
Very fast, yeah.
Yeah, very fast. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, speed reading it. But yeah, no, to me, it's winding it on. So I'm still sort of recovering. I'm still kind of trying to get back to full fitness. So I will be kind of training. And I mean, it's got a nice gym there in the hotel, so I'll just be in that most of the time.
And is your wife into bikes at all? Was she into it before you? No,
absolutely not. And I'm laughing because she got on the bike once with me when we was about 17, 18 and just screamed. I didn't think I went above 10 mile an hour. I just turned around and drop her off. Yeah, absolutely hates them, which is quite good. No, to be fair, there's no interest in the bikes and that. Which I don't mind, to be fair, because I can see the benefits of having a partner that's involved and wants to be involved. And then I can also see the positives of having that disconnection. So I can kind of park it in the garage. And then that's that bit of my life that, you know, you don't have to worry about. It's sort of dealt with. And I don't think it'd be an idea to kind of have her or my family here, because I still yet have to watch a road race, because I watched one on Wednesday. That was my first road race I've ever actually sat by a trackside and watched. And it's mental. So to kind of put them through that and then have to watch me go out, I don't think would be, for them anyway, I don't think it would be nice.
So they're not coming over for MGP?
Don't think so, no. I did suggest it, but I think if we did, only because the island's so nice, and like we've done Castle Town and it's lovely down there. So he said, why don't you come out for a couple of days and just sort of even just mooch around and have a look at the island, you know, it's a bit of a holiday.
Yeah, I'm not a holiday for you though.
No.
And what is the plan then? So fingers crossed you're going to bring this weather with you in August for MGP. TT, obviously you mentioned that you entered last year and obviously that wasn't successful at that point. Is that still something that's on your bucket list?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the weather thing, I just want to add on that one. 2 years in a row I've done the Northwest, and 2 years in a row we've all been sunburnt and it's been fantastic. Come to the Southern and I've burnt my nose the other day. And weather's been fantastic, so I'm going to bring the weather. Obviously, it's me. I'm lucky for it, so I'll bring it. Yeah, and that is the plan, really, is to kind of have a really good Manx Grand Prix. And then probably we was looking at doing a Froberg IRRC round, but we might end up just doing a couple of stock foul rounds at the end of the year, put our entry in for the TT next year and see how it goes.
Gosh, it's such a lot to think about, though, isn't it? Like you say, and until you've been out there, I mean, you might go round for that first lap round, Craig, and think, oh, I don't really like it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and do you know what? Yeah, that always is a possibility. And the team would be completely understandable if I did. Having done the Southern now, and there's riders that won't do the Southern that do the TT circuit, yeah, I think I know I like road racing. Obviously, the TT circuit's a lot longer, and there's a lot more to remember, but... To me, it's like it's the mecca of it all. So it really is the one to be in.
So obviously, with the ILR racing team, does that mean everything's sorted for you sponsorship-wise? Do you need to worry about that side of things?
Yeah, so I'm racing for Ian, but obviously I bring my own sort of personal sponsors with me. So obviously, I mentioned earlier, I've got Smart, that's the company I work for. IHV were the team I was riding for the Southern and for the Northwest, and I've got Will Bond, who's kind of a plumb centre that's just been with us. Again, that was a very strange one. It's just a couple of lads turned up to Silverstone a few years ago. We got them on the grid, just they were normal people, and it was great. And then they've been jacking the sponsorship ever since, and I've only met them a handful of times. Every year it's the same thing. They come to one round or maybe two, and then we carry it on. So it's all good.
And it really is the case that every single pound does count, or whatever it is, whether it's, you know, a flat to stay or a bike to loan for a little bit.
Massively, yeah. I mean, for me, sponsorship isn't about just taking money for me to live my dream. It's everything involved. It's kind of, it makes it possible, because then we're able to do the nice stuff like put the new tyre on for that race and things like that. So I did take the mindset years ago that if I can't do it properly, I won't do it all. Because I don't think you should scrimp on things, especially when it comes to tyres and stuff like that. But yeah, it does. It makes it easier. But sponsorship can be someone helping. It can be someone turning up or providing a bike to ride around the island, or you know, a place to stay and stuff like that. Everyone wants to help, which is great. And I think that's kind of the biking community is all about that. It's funny because a lot of people that touch base with me about sponsorship, they get that misconception that it's hundreds of thousands of pounds and millions of pounds. They watch Formula One on the telly and they think that's what sponsorship means.
But I mean, if they've got it, you know.
Yeah, I have it, though, yeah. No, but it could be anything. It could just be someone giving us a hand in the paddock sort of thing. You know, my sort of team is just, we're all just friends that kind of have found each other and enjoy the same sort of racing and same thing, and that's kind of how we run.
And the thing in the MGP, obviously, you've got the pit stops. How much experience have you got of that side of things so far?
For me, absolutely none.
Right.
So apart from a few endurance rounds I've done over the years, and then normally just bike changes. You don't actually do any refueling and stuff. Ian's obviously got experience, so I'm just palming it over to him. I actually asked him the other day, I said, he's got all the suits, he's got all the people. Their teams are running the bike and everything, so we've got to worry about anything like that. My guys coming over are really just kind of for my own personal mental support and a bit of help there, and that we can be runners and stuff like that as well, in case we need to, you know, get some tyres changed and stuff. But yeah, the pit stop thing, looking forward to that. I think it's going to be a bit different. Trying not to overspeed in pit lane is going to be difficult, because once the adrenaline is flowing, I think I'm going to forget that, shall we say.
And it's finding your crew as well. I don't know, there must be so much going on at that point. I think that'll be the thing. And I suppose you can't really practice, can you?
No, yeah, it's not like you could just pop in now and give it a go. Yeah, actually, we'd have to make out some sort of... I've got good eyesight.
That's good to know, Craig.
Yeah, yeah. So I should be able to see, like, hopefully should be able to see him, as long as we're, like, kind of... we're getting to wear a silly hat or something, you know, just in case it does get a bit confusing.
Yeah.
I think it's more them seeing me, you know, because actually I know that the guys that do my boards now don't even see me coming, so I can miss some boards every now and then, which is quite funny. It's quite amusing.
And are you going to have boards around the course then? Is that the plan?
That's the plan, yeah. I've got some friends that are coming over, and they said they're happy just to prop up and, you know, listen to the radio, put some boards out and that. I think it's important, if you're doing well and not to get picked at the post, you'd hate to go, like, if you're in third or whatever, and in fourth, that'd be quite devastating. So, yeah, so I think pit boards are important.
Do you know, it's such pressure, though, for the people doing the pit boards, because I'd just be like, oh, my God, you wouldn't want to get it wrong, would you? But, I mean, presumably it'd be very forgiving.
Yeah. No, to be fair, it is what it is. People make mistakes. I have had it before, which, you know, you get a plus two, and then actually they're up your chuff, and you get picked to the line, and it is annoying, but it is what it is, you know. For me, if it's an indication of, like, I mean, you can see the person in front. If you can see them, then you know you're faster than them, because you're going off the gaps. But yeah, the people behind, I think, is quite important, because you can have an idea roughly where you are position wise, and then you can kind of manage it. You can sit there and say, well, I can push for a better position, or actually, yeah, I'm happy where I am, and it's not going to happen tonight.
And, you know, again, I was talking to a couple of people about this previously. It's how you can take that sort of information in when you're going at speed. It's just, I find it completely mind-boggling. It's like, how do you do that?
Yeah, to be fair, I mean, most of my pit boards I've ever had, obviously, are short circuits. So stuff like Silverstone, where you kind of just, you come around Woodcut and you have a quick little glance, it takes you two or three corners for you to digest the information because you're going so fast. You try not to look at them as well. You just kind of flick your eyes over at the board. And then you kind of think, right, that was P7. And then you kind of count it through your head and try and remember. And by the time you've actually thought and digested it, you're two or three corners down the road. So that's me anyway. I don't know about other people.
Yeah, I need to have a lie down just thinking about it. How active are you on social media with sort of keeping up to date with what you're doing race-wise?
Yeah, to be fair, all my social media is really bike-related. I don't kind of have anything other than bike talk. So even my LinkedIn page is, it's not about kind of my working career. It's about what I'm doing in the motorcycle, just because I think it's important for me to promote the people that are supporting me and also promote myself so I can kind of get the name out there. I think that in most things in life, it's face fits, and if no one knows your name, then it doesn't matter how good you are, you need to be known. There's lots of people out there, even riders, that kind of average sort of, or even worse, and but they're famous because their name's out there and everyone knows who they are, so they kind of get some a lot further along the line than someone that kind of sits yeah.
And so where is the best place for people to follow you?
That's a good question. So it'd be Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn, if I'm honest, and it's, I'm always under my own name, so it's always like Craig Kennelly at 29, or I think it's my Instagram, but some numbers change all the time, so it's kind of either 90 or 29 is roughly what I run.
Joe, I'm just looking, Craig, at the time we've been chatting here, about 34 minutes. The reality is, in MGP, you could pretty much have done two laps in that time. That is insane.
Wow, that is mad, yeah. Considering it just took me an hour to get around and do one lap earlier. I did stop for a cup of tea, so that probably doesn't help. But yeah,
probably don't do that on the race day, eh?
No.
Take a flask. Take a flask with you.
Yeah, I'll get my camel hump. I'll have tea just to feed me.
The plan is, are you going to go out and do a few more laps now?
Yes, yeah. I've got nothing to do today. Tomorrow's the start of the newcomer days, so I've got obviously going to go around the cars with instructors again, which is great. But today I've just got the bike and I'm just going to keep emptying the tank and refilling it until it gets dark.
Craig, well, thank you so much for taking the time to pop in here. We wish you all the very best and we'll catch up with you during MGP. Have a wonderful holiday. Maybe just try sitting down for a bit.
Yeah.
See what it's like.
No worries, we'll do. Thank you.
Craig Kennelly, and as I speak at the moment, he's probably on his umpteenth lap of the TT course today. We really do wish him all the very best and hope it's as smooth as it possibly can be over the next few weeks in the run-up to MGP. And as I said, we will keep up to date with how he's getting on. The link to his Facebook page is on the podcast page, so do take a look at that and keep up to date with how he's doing. Journey to a Dream is brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance, and you can find out more about them, as always, by visiting their website. It's kawasaki-insurance.co.uk. And if you'd like to get in touch and be part of the podcast in future, then my email address is bethesby@manxradio.com. Until next time, take care. Bye-bye.